Sound Opinions is supported by Goose Island Beer Company, which believes great beer can be as exciting as great music. Since 1988, Goose Island has been committed to that belief by brewing new styles of beer like 312 Urban Wheat Ale, Sophie Farmhouse Ale, and Bourbon County Stout. Goose Island, to what's next? GooseIsland.com.
This is Sound Opinions, and Jim, as you and the listeners know, the Desert Island Jukebox is one of our favorite segments of
love
the show.
Love it.
We've done hundreds of these, I guess, and it's just one of those things where every week we come up with a track that we think reflects something that we're thinking about. And this particular week, I have been thinking about a band out of the UK, the Mekons, because they are touring for the first time in years. But I'm not playing a Mekons track, so I'm hoping the listeners will enjoy it. I know I will enjoy the song, but first we got some music news.
Like high plains drifters and midnight misters, dancing with the devil's rock and roll. Dirt poor playboys and drugstore cowboys. Hey, yeah, Rebel Soul.
Kid Rock with Rebel Soul, the title track from his 2012 album. Why are we playing Kid Rock? Why are we playing that song? Well, that artist and that song is at the center of a controversy that has been brewing for several months in the South. The South Carolina legislature recently voted to remove the Confederate flag from the State House. The governor signed it into law. This was motivated by the racially tinged shooting of 9 people at a historic church in Charleston. There's been national reaction to that decision and that shooting. And it's also affected the rock world. I mean, for decades, the Confederate flag, it's been cool for certain bands to use the Confederate flag as a sign of how rebel they are and how, you know, non-establishment, non-conformist they are. We're talking about people like Lynyrd Skynyrd, Pantera, Zakk Wylde, Hank Williams Jr. and Blake Shelton from the country area. They've used it from everything from a stage backdrop and in their merch to pieces of their song lyrics. Now, we have activists in Michigan demanding that an artist like Kid Rock stop displaying the flag as he did on the 2012 tour. Well, Kid Rock had a very terse response when asked about what the activists were protesting. He said, "Please tell the people who are protesting to kiss my butt." I'm paraphrasing a little bit. Mm. Kid Rock from Michigan, how he relates to the Confederate flag, you know, it seems a little bit disingenuous on his part.
My favorite part of this whole controversy has been the number of history professors stepping forward to say what that battle standard is. Not even actually the flag of the Confederacy, what it actually means.
Yeah, and I think it has driven a number of people to examine their conscience and their feelings about what that flag represents. An artist like Chuck D of Public Enemy getting on Twitter and social media and basically saying to African Americans, this is a swastika.
Yeah.
And has been for decades, and it's about time that people started recognizing what it actually means in that context. You still have artists who are very defiant about this. Pantera has been defunct for a number of years, but they're still selling T-shirts on their website bearing the flag, for example. But an artist like Tom Petty, who featured the Confederate flag prominently on stage during his Southern Accents tour in 1985, now says he regrets the decision. The Confederate flag became part of the marketing for the tour, he says. I wish I had given it more thought. It was a downright stupid thing to do. And I think the most eloquent statement about this entire controversy has come from the Drive-By Truckers' Patterson Hood. The Drive-By Truckers, a band famous for addressing a lot of these issues head-on. They're from Alabama.
Yeah.
They have lived with the duality of that Southern thing, as Patterson Hood has said. They addressed it in their 2001 Southern Rock Opera album. And in a recent piece in the New York Times Magazine, he again took it on in a very thoughtful essay. Here's what Patterson had to say. If we want to truly honor our Southern forefathers, we should do it by moving on from the symbols and prejudices of their time and building on the diversity, the art, and the literary traditions we've inherited from them.
What do you guys think about it at home? Give us a call to the Sound Opinions Hotline, 888-859-1800.
'Cause you got that James Dean.
Greg, that, of course, is a little bit of Taylor Swift, whose music is now available on Apple Music. That got a lot of attention. So did the launch overall on June 30th of Apple Music, Apple's bid to get into the streaming music business in a big way. So there's been a lot of attention so far. People are comparing it to Spotify. Interestingly, Spotify, in the couple of weeks since Apple Music's launch, has had more downloads on the iTunes Store than ever in its history since breaking into this country. I think all of the attention on the word streaming, period, is getting people to just turn to it, and Spotify right now is the name out front. Both have 30 million songs, roughly. Spotify makes it a little easier for me to share a playlist with you. I can still do that on Apple, but not in the app. On the other hand, Apple Music has the Beats 1 global radio station, which I found kind of cool when I was listening to. It's 24/7 global radio curated by DJs from around the world. Really genre blind and eclectic and interesting. I was in Paris on vacation and my wife and I went to the Picasso Museum, okay? And I'm singing the whole time Jonathan Richman's Pablo Picasso. Great song, right? And she'd never heard it, so I'm not doing it justice. I turned to the update I'd automatically gotten on my iPhone and it took me, you know, I don't know, 10 seconds using the search function to find both John Cale's version of that song and Jonathan Richman's. I didn't find it that difficult. Other people have complained about the search function and said you have to ask Siri to find me whatever song. What's going to happen in 3 months? That's going to be interesting to see. Because 3 months from now, the free trial of Apple Music ends, and you have to decide whether it's going to be worth $10 a month for you to continue streaming through Apple. That's when we're going to really have an interesting news story about the success or failure of Apple Music. If only Sound Opinions, and you're listening to Eventually from Australian psychedelic rockers Tame Impala. This band led by singer, songwriter, guitarist Kevin Parker, who's gained quite a reputation as an audio perfectionist, spending months and months on every detail of his band's recordings. And he's been this way since he began making music at age 11. I think it's fair to say the attention to detail has paid off. Tame Impala's 2012 record, Lonerism, ended up on both of our best lists for that year, Greg. And now they're playing prime spots at big festivals like Lollapalooza, supporting their new album, Currents, which we'll review later in the show.
Tame Impala joined us in the studio in 2013. Now, at the time, the members of the band included Kevin Parker, Dominic Simper, Jay Watson, Nick Albrook, and Julian Barbagallo. We began our conversation with Parker's early bedroom recordings, and I asked Kevin about how he started down the road of bedroom recording at such a young age.
I guess it was just the obsession with hearing yourself played back to yourself. You know, like being able to just layer things on top of each other. I don't know, it just seemed like an amazing concept in a completely egotistical way, you know.
You had a tape recorder, you had, what, it was a four-track, or what kind of gear did you have?
It was just a cassette. I just had found two cassette players in the house and recorded drums onto one of them and then played that back when I was like hitting a keyboard and then like recorded that into a new tape. Mm-hmm. Yeah, just like it's like a really standard living room hi-fi tape recorder. And
that's
then got
really
that tape.
Primitive.
Oh yeah, super primitive. It sounded terrible.
How awesome. How old was this? What was the age?
11 or 12 or something. I don't know. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But the Tame Impala story really starts at 13. You're in Catholic high school, right? In Perth, Australia, and you meet Dominic Simper.
Yeah, that's when we started playing music together.
What did you see in each other that brought you guys together?
I instantly noticed that Dom was a better guitarist than me, and I was really jealous. And I was like, no.
What were you guys listening to at 13?
Well, I was just all things guitar and angsty, mm-hmm. And I just noticed Dom could shred insanely.
Okay.
All right, so in fact, I think he was playing. I remember he was playing. Oh no, I heard some like Red Hot Chili Peppers playing in the room next to me because we had this like music class, and I thought it was someone who put on the CD, mm-hmm. And it was just Dom playing like Scar Tissue or whatever. Uh-huh. And I was like, what?
Dom is here in complete silence, and he's running scales up and down the neck.
Yeah.
Right, so I think we got his number. We know. But you're not posing about it, Kevin. You're not saying, I was deconstructing Smile and trying to put it back together at age 13.
Oh, no, far from it.
13 years old, the two of you get together. You took it out of the bedroom, obviously. Did you get out and play some shows at that point?
No, not really. I mean, once a year, the school put on a fete, and all the bands could like play in the school hall while everyone else was like walking around eating fairy floss. And that was like the date that we looked forward to the most. We had like, you know, three people watching, but it was still the most amazing thing.
Is this an Australian thing, like Vegemite, fairy floss?
Oh, fairy floss.
Yeah.
Oh.
It's a new one on us, and we're curious.
Oh, cotton candy.
Cotton candy. All right, okay.
The band got going in 2010 with Interspeaker. That was the album that a lot of people took notice of here in the States. That was the first anybody had heard of you. So walk us through that transition from, you know, two guys making music in the hallway at school to making this incredibly elaborate debut album in 2010.
Well, they're always kind of separate, separate but sort of connected. They'd always be me in my bedroom making music, and then we'd play gigs. Sometimes not even the same song. Sometimes we play a completely different set list of any stuff I was recording. And some of the songs we played, I never recorded because they were just live songs, you know. I never really sort of thought that the live band and the recording project were, it had the same name, but that was about it. The name was the only thing that was really linked about it. Other than that, it was just like a completely different way of making music. And it's only really now, like the last couple of years, that there's a reason to tie the two together.
So really that first record was basically an extension of what you were doing when you were an 11, 12-year-old kid making those crude little recordings of yourself.
I still record more crudely than anyone I know. Like this recording session we're doing now is a lot more high fidelity than Lonerism was recorded. Hmm. I still record just as terribly as I always have.
What do you mean by that though exactly? I mean, people are saying you get these beautiful sounds. And yet you're so deprecating about the
I don't know.
About the recording technology. What is crude about it? Is it just old stuff or what it's, exactly are you using?
Well, it's just whatever I can get my hands on, really. I mean, the instruments I kind of take a lot of pride in, like the guitars and drums and stuff. But the microphones, like all the microphones I own, just got given to me by our friend who has a studio because he felt sorry for me. Because I only had like one mic that I use on the drums. And sometimes I can't, if I'm in a spot where I got to record something and I don't have anything, then it's just going to be singing into the laptop mic, you know. In fact, I never did that on the album. But the lead guitar in Apocalypse Dreams is like the guitar just plugged with a lead and a headphone jack and like a jack. Plugged into the microphone input on my MacBook and then just like screwed with it on Ableton. Like that's the sound. There's no pedals or anything. It's just, and that's pretty much as terrible as you can get.
Well, Tame Impala is here in the studio with us on Sound Opinions. How about a song, Kevin?
This is Why Won't You Make Up Your Mind
by Tame Impala. All right.
Why Won't You Make Up Your Mind by Tame Impala live on Sound Opinions. Coming up after the break on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX, more music and talk with Kevin Parker and the band. Then, later in the show, we review Tame Impala's new album, Currents.